This episode is sponsored by Cruise Planners, aka Dell's Travel Company. If you need to take a trip anywhere, whether it's in the country or out of the country, then Dell's Travel Company is for you. I myself used this service on my honeymoon, but it got me from Philadelphia to Manchester to Liverpool to London to Paris, all places I had no idea what to do when I was there, and I just followed my itinerary and I was all set. So if you want to find out more about this company, stay tuned to the middle of the episode to find out how to join his mailing list. I hate myself.
That was so funny.
All right. I'm going to leave this in. I just made a mistake I haven't made in a very long time. I just wasn't recording.
That was a good one.
And Bill and I were having a nice conversation. Good thing I just checked now. Welcome back to Scene Invaders, episode 220. Should we talk about that again?
So
just talked about UFC for a while.
That was that's the second lost episode of Scene Invaders.
Second lost episode,
welcome
yeah.
to episode 221 of Scene Invaders.
Well, guess what? If you guys want to hear us talk about UFC, we could actually put that on YouTube. You know?
Yeah, we should. I actually mentioned that in the group, and people said they want to hear stuff. So we'll do a video of what we just talked about. It was a good combo.
It was natural flowing, but it'd be cool because a lot of people say they want to see the foursome back of me, you, and both Pats. So, you know, that'd be something perfect to get them on and talk about exactly what we just talked about. So maybe we'll try to set that up in the coming weeks. So look forward to that. But yeah, welcome back. And thanks for joining the group, the Facebook group. And how about Bill, you guys tell them more about this. It's a lot of fun. If you guys haven't joined it, join it. It's great.
Yeah, so we obviously have great interaction on our videos, a lot of our podcasts. We've gotten a lot of DMs from people we really appreciate over the lifespan of the podcast. But we wanted to create a more centralized space for everyone to interact. So the most common ground social media, Twitter's there, but at least you know you have your character limits and it kind of makes it a little bit harder. So we do have a Facebook private group. It's called the Scene Invaders Lunch Table. So if you just type in Scene Invaders on anything, it'll probably pop up, but the full title is Scene Invaders Lunch Table. Almost 300 members strong as of this recording. It's been really awesome. I really again want to give a shout out to Brad from Canada, Will, Jason, and all of the community members. It's been really cool to see. I was sort of worried that initially it may just be myself and a few of us in a little bit of an echo chamber, but I've been really pleasantly surprised how many people have been organically bringing up topics. So I really appreciate it. Tell your friends. It's a lot of fun and we are going to have a lot more even going on in that group. You can do video chat things. We're going to do some live watch along stuff eventually, some different threads for shows that are on that are spoiler threads specifically for shows. So going to be a lot of interactions. We appreciate the support so far.
Yeah, I think along with what you said, people appreciate the safe space feelness to it because obviously you have to request or you have to be invited and it's a private group. So no one's going to see where you're posting. So like I'm posting stuff in this group that I would never post on my timeline, you know, stuff that I think is funny, little memes, little giggles I like to have. But I rarely post on my one that everybody can see, my public profile. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. So join up if you're not. And you'll get a lot of funny memes. You'll get recommendations. We have weekly polls, trivia, just a whole bunch of stuff, funny videos. It's a lot of fun. It's basically like Twitter, but just with people that like movies like us. So if that can explain it at all. But yeah, other than that, please subscribe to the YouTube. You know, 5-star ratings don't hurt. And if you gently, you know, just gently rub your nose on that subscribe button, that'd be nice. And, you know, if that little gentle rub happens to make you want to sneeze, you know, on your way down as you're sneezing, why don't you smash that 5-star button on the podcast, you know, the Apple or whatever you listen on. It could be Spotify. I don't know. But, you know, on your way, you know what I mean, Bill? When you sneeze, you go and then on your way down, you go down. So your head moves down. So then you can smash that 5-star button on your way from the subscribe because you're just You're just gently doing the subscribe one. Just
if you have really, if you do have bad allergies, like some of us do, if you want to start getting really crazy and sharing some of the videos that we post, or, you know, leaving even more comments. And like you said, Spotify reviews, anything, any way that you guys can spread the word, we really appreciate it. We are never going to do any of the inorganic growth. I can't tell you the amount of messages I get on Instagram, Twitter, and my DMs on Facebook every day from SEO people. Half of them got to be fake bot accounts, but a lot of these people trying to get us to pay for boosts and for growth. And obviously there's always the allure of the number of having large subscribers, but Dan and I have done a lot of research, and you would be really surprised at some of these pages that have 900, 1,000, the level we're working to get to soon. And their videos have like 10 views. No one views. Yeah. They're not actual subscribers. You look at our page, even when we had 100 views, and wasn't like tooting our own horn, but just the ratio of our subscribers to the viewers is actually very healthy and organic. And we're never going to take a shortcut to get there. We didn't think we'd be this far. So the fact that we're still growing and growing at the pace we are, we're going to keep taking that ride as naturally as we can.
Yeah. And we're going to, you know, we're going to take that ride. And like I said, this all starts with you just gently rubbing your nose on that subscribe button. That's all it takes. And then, you know, that sneeze that you lost when you were like 7 at a pool party, maybe it comes through and you're like, wow, I feel better now. And that all starts with just a gentle rub. Okay. So here we go. If you don't want to subscribe, I don't care, but we have fun, so you might as well. I do care. This is like the only thing going positive in my... No, okay, let's get into
just don't, it. Just don't unsubscribe because of our rant.
Yeah. Gentle rub. All right. Sneeze. Get it out. Fear Street. So we have two things in common this week. I'm going to save that for like a median what's new. But I did what... Or actually, I have something to talk about. So I'm going on Paul Hart's show, Apples to Oranges. And we're recording on Wednesday. I don't know when it's going to drop, but if you follow me on Twitter or whatever, I'm going to tweet it out whenever it comes out. But I'm excited to go on it because Bill's talked about it before. He's been a guest. It's called Apples to Oranges because they talk about strictly Apple TV shows. Mm-hmm. And it's a really good idea for a podcast because of all the great content that's coming out. And all I'm seeing is more and more trailers and posters of stuff with really, really high level actors in it. And it's only going to get better. So if you're going to pay for a service, Apple TV is right up there. It's seriously making me rethink my top three or whatever list of who to subscribe to, because obviously you have to do Disney Plus with all the Marvel stuff and Star Wars, and then Netflix is king still. So it might be three right now. I don't know. Hulu and Amazon are still good, but yeah, Apple TV is really killing it. So what I'm going to be talking about, Bill, is we're going to do a whole season one retrospective of Ted Lasso, which is good because it's fresh in my mind from recapping it for Pat for the recaps. So we're going to do that. I'm not going to talk about any of this now, by the way. So just listen to the episode to get my thoughts on this stuff. Lizzie's story. I think it'll be 7 episodes in by the time I go on.
Yep, I'm caught up.
Yeah. So I'm excited for that. Actually, I went to visit my dad on yesterday for me, and his wife had a copy of it on the table, and she's a huge Stephen King fan. Like half the time I hear of something by seeing her read a book, and then I'll see it like becoming a TV show, just like The Outsider. And she always gets whatever right off the bat. If he makes it, she buys it, which I respect because I'm like that with a lot of directors. If they make it, I see it. So I go over there and she has a copy of Lizzie's story on the kitchen table, and I pick it up. I'm like, oh, it's a TV show now. And she's like, it just came out. I'm like, yeah, that's what they're doing with Stephen King books now. It seems like once he comes out with a title, people have a bidding war. Because you remember, Outsider was made right after that book came out. You know, it's just, definitely. He just pumps out books and they're all good. So people just run with it and like, all right, we'll make it a series. I think after it came out, it caused the Stephen King resurgence and for people to like want to watch his stuff and see it get remade and or made for the first time. So yeah, I'll be talking about that, and also Trying, which
awesome claims, show, amazing Paul claims show.
Season 2 is better than Ted Lasso season 1.
That's not true. No, listen, Paul, I love you, Paul. I know you're listening. You're a great supporter. I did finish all of Trying. Dan, you're going to love it. Amazing show. If anyone's ever saw Catastrophe, that was on Amazon Prime. That
yes,
was
another
British comedy. Very similar vibes, Dan. So it's really great. It's a great show. I think the way he was more saying it is that this year, it was this year's Ted Lasso. Season two was this year's. If he claims it's better than season one of Ted Lasso, nothing's been better than season one of Ted Lasso. Maybe season two of Ted Lasso will be better. Maybe.
So that comes out in a couple of weeks. So make sure to sub to Paul because they're going to talk about it every week. Well, we probably will too because we stand Ted Lasso pretty damn hard. And did you see for the award season, four actors are up for supporting actor Ted Lasso, and there's only seven in the category, and four of them are from Ted Lasso. You want to guess who it is?
So are these all supporting, or are they combined supporting and lead?
All supporting actors here.
Oh, so
male, all male.
Wow, really? Did Roy get one?
Yep.
Did Higgins get one?
Yep.
Coach Beard?
Yep.
And then I guess the only one really left is it what the actor for the new coach, the equipment manager?
Nate? Yep. Nate the Great.
Hey! What does it say on my profile? Number one diamond dog, just like Danny runs off the Tarantino movies.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing you nailed them, or you would have had to take that down. So yeah, look out for that. Like I said, I'm recording Wednesday. I don't know when it's coming out, but I'll let you guys know when I find out. And so, yeah, Bill's going to explain the five movie this time challenge. We got tied up. So the gift was going to be Black Widow movie tickets. Now we'll just get you movie tickets and you can see Black Widow if you want, but that'll probably be out. And we don't have a date for it. We had a lot of other stuff come up. And, you know, we have to record Loki this Wednesday. I have to go on Apples to Oranges. I have two jobs. Like, it's just Bill's getting ready to get married. It's just a lot going on right now. So it was harder than we expected to squeeze in these five movies. But we will get that out to you. But also something else I wanted to talk about is, Bill, do you know we have like people from like 30 to 50 nations that listen every week? And it's pretty cool.
It is pretty wild. I love that little map thing. And every time that a new country pops up, I always get a little like, oh, where the hell did that come from? It's really great. But right. The stories are organic. People are people. And that's a great part about podcasting. And it's been a great part about the community because we sometimes are so abstract and so insular, especially in the United States and especially in the Northeast where we live. We don't think anything else exists outside of what we do and our hustle and bustle. But there are people in, you know, the countries you're about to name that they're the same as us. Everyone is the same. We all have a love of the same stuff, which is just so goddamn cool.
Right. So I had an idea. If you're from a different country, send me, you know, not too many, cause I don't want to, you know, overpromise here, but send me a couple movies, maybe one or two that are filmed, shot, directed, written, produced in your nation. And there's a good chance I never heard of it. And that's just the way things go. So I already have two suggestions here from our friends in Argentina, specifically Lucia. So number one and two, Bill, you should write these down because they look really good. Nice. So Nine Queens is the one we're supposed to watch first because it has an actor, and I'll look up his name, but he's a legend in Argentina. And one of these movies is early in his career. One of these movies is late in his career. Okay. So Nine Queens in Spanish is Nueve Reinas.
Yeah.
And Wild Tales, Relatos Salvajes in Spanish. So they are the two movies that
Tales are, as in like a story or as in like a dog like, tale. Okay.
Like a story. Yeah. So
we'll put in the episode description for people.
Right. Yeah. So if you guys want to watch along with us, I think that'd be fun. And like I said, something that's completely made in your country that you really like, send it in. Because I like checking out foreign films, you know.
Not you, Brad. Not Canadian. That doesn't count. Not you.
So it's just cool because, you know, you never know. Like, dude, my favorite zombie movie of all time was made in South Korea. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, Train to Busan. So it's just, you never know when something's just going to blow your mind. So if we have access to these, you know, this audience that are from all over the place, we might as well get some cool. We give you guys suggestions, give us something to watch, you know, it'd be fun. So it's Ricardo Darín. He's supposedly like a huge, huge star in Argentina. So I'm very excited. Two movies of his, and yeah, it's gonna be fun. So, all right, the other two are things that you've also watched. I guess we could just break them down together right now.
Yeah,
Fear Street. I called up. I watched 1994. Oh, and by the way, guys, Black Widow review is going to be at the end of the episode. We're going to have timestamps now from now on, like we used to do. So if you want to just skip to that and come back, go ahead and we'll see you soon. So yeah, just look at the timestamp on the bottom. So I watched 1994 and then I watched 1977. And I really like how these were built to be a trilogy. You can totally, I mean, they straight up were. It's basically like a 6-hour movie where they keep going back and forth in time. Now, I know you said it was like enjoyable, but where do you stand after seeing two of these movies? Do you like highly recommend, or, you know, only if you're a horror fan, something like that?
I'm curious to see how they land it. So I really, really enjoyed 1994. I didn't hate 1977.
Same.
There are some similarities. So obviously 1977, you get that 80s horror slasher vibe that you and I are both into.
Mm-hmm.
The body count is crazy high in this one, in the second one.
Yeah.
They killed the shit out of children.
Oh yeah.
They slice like children right in the face. There is no anything. However, I don't and still didn't care about any of the characters in this one compared to the first one. Correct?
Oh, the first one, I love the characters. Yeah, I don't, outside of the girl from Stranger Things, the redhead, I couldn't think of anyone. I guess her sister, kind of. But these movies are just, I don't know how to say it. I don't want to say they're bad. They're not bad. They're definitely enjoyable, especially the first one. But the third one is interesting. It takes place in 1666, and it's going to star all of the actors from the first two movies. And about midway through the first movie, 1994, they tell you what's happening. So you know, you get a pretty good idea after the first murder scene, but you know what's going on. So when you're going into the second one, you already know what's happening because it's all the same story. So like you said, I want to see how they land it, and how are they landing it? They're going back to the beginning of how everything started. So yeah, it was nice seeing, what's her name? Gillian from Community. It was nice seeing her. I like her a lot. She surprised me being in the second one. Gillian Jacobs. I didn't expect to see her at all, and that was a nice surprise. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I enjoy them. I enjoy them. Are you there with me?
No, yeah. I mean, I'm obviously going to finish the trilogy. I just, like you said, I just wish that you could almost tell when they were making this one, they didn't care if we cared about the characters. And the people making it, even if they're going to make a crappy movie, they should still be attempting to make us care. And they kind of screwed it, like you said, Dad. They told us from midway through the first movie that there's only one survivor. So what the hell am I investing in any of these people? There was no Easter eggs. Like, any of these people were going to be important outside of the cop. That was pretty obvious who he was, because the first scene he was in, they mentioned that his dad had been sheriff and just died. So it's like, oh, so that's the sheriff. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess that makes sense. And maybe they're going to give him the redemption arc, I guess, in the third one. There's a lot of shit for them to actually resolve still in this third one. How the hell does her going back in time solve all the crap? I don't know. Everything's a time travel. Everything's a time travel.
I actually think it's all going to be a vision of what actually happened, and that she's not actually back in time. And then she'll come back in 94.
I want her to go back in time. Bullshit.
She might, but I think just because, like, it's like Wizard of Oz. She's there with all the people that she knows and that she's just been told about from the campfire, or the lake cabin, whatever you want to call it. Story in 1977. So it's a combination of all the characters. We'll see what's actually going on, but if you guys aren't caught up, just watch them. I mean, you'll get through them pretty quickly, and you know, you can watch one night, one the other night, and then you got the third one that comes out on Friday. And really cool idea to have a trilogy come out back to back to back. Yeah, I'm into it. I'm definitely into it. And then it looks like Bill and I both went back in time and checked out The Simpsons. So
yeah,
I initially went on to watch Bart the Bad Guy, which was in the most recent season, and it's a parody of the Avengers. They're called like the Indicators or something like that. Vindicators. That's what it is. And because I was like, that's definitely not right. And then on my way back, which, by the way, that episode is hilarious, and I'm going to start watching The Simpsons more. I realized how much I missed that show. And on my way out, I see what you had written down, The Good, the Bad, and the Loki. And that's 10 minutes, maybe?
Not even. Something, I think it's like six.
6 minutes. Yeah. Which was really good. So you want to talk about that one?
It's just a Simpsons animated short. The Simpsons are the originators. Before Robot Chicken exists or Family Guy, even with parodies, Simpsons were doing parodies of really popular properties. So for this one, obviously, we're talking about Loki and the Avengers, but they focus on Loki with the Loki series going on. It's the basic premise of it is that this is really funny. Actually, it made me laugh out loud when I realized what was happening was that Loki is caught by Odin and Thor. And he's getting his punishment, and his punishment is to be banished. And people are, he's like, are you going to banish me to hell? And he starts naming different realms in Marvel, and they go, no, Springfield. And he's like, no. And so they banish him to Springfield. He meets Bart. They turn out that they're kindred spirits. Homer and Odin have a lot of parallels. They're children that are with abusive parents in their minds. Loki ends up doing a trick with Bart and switching places. And I won't go any further, but it's just really clever, well written Simpsons stuff. There's a lot of, they do a lot of, like I said, parody characters. So you see a lot of Springfield characters as Marvel superheroes. And I paused and I'll share it in the Facebook group, but it's really funny that the quick screenshot you
the
see.
The sign,
the characters there. A lot that you don't see in the movies right now. A lot more deep dive characters too, which is really funny. So I really enjoyed that. And I do like when we get to mix in these short investments as opposed to these long movies we're always watching.
Yeah, and what was it? This is what happens when Disney buys Fox and... Fox and Marvel, when they buy Fox and Marvel, and they're all just sitting there. It's great. If you haven't watched it, watch it. Yeah.
Halloween costumes, basically.
Yeah, and it's crazy that, you know, The Simpsons are on Disney Plus. It's something I didn't even really think about until I saw these. So yeah, I'm gonna be watching some Simpsons episodes as one of my bedtime routines when I'm not watching Community. Which, by the way, have you given that some thought yet?
I will be getting into it this week. I didn't forget about it. I have the list.
Community? That's what you went with?
No. I'm going to do Community this week. I'm going to start it, actually.
Nice,
so,
nice. Because I thought you were deciding between that and Friends.
No. I need to do Friends. People know me. I'm a big pop culture. I like the idea of like having a full library and idea of a history of the flow. And I do know the major plot lines. It's not like I'm going to be surprised at what happens and that Ross and Rachel end up together and blah, blah, blah. But I do think I'll probably do myself a favor. And after I do Community, I will, just like you're saying, Dan, I'm not binging the show out this week. I'm not going to be able to say, hey guys, or who knows, maybe I'll love it so much I'll finish it in a week, but I'm going to try to do, like you said, bedtime after I do a couple of our like more serious series or shows. It's a nice thing where I can knock in two or three before bed. So I will give you my first impressions next week.
It's the perfect bedtime show. Cause you always go to bed happy. Because it always makes you smile. And the first season is so legendary. And Abed and Troy's friendship, when you watch that blossom, it's just, oh, it's amazing. And they have like the best secret handshake ever. You're going to love it. All right. So before we get into news, something I've been forgetting. So friend of the show, Josh Dupuy, if you still listen, hit me up or hit Brian up or something. But let's get you on because I totally spaced on that. And now you don't work at the same place anymore. And I don't have any way to contact you. So if you still listen, hit up Brian or something. Let's get you on. So sorry about that. He's really a knowledgeable guy. And I think he'd get along with him, Bill. So, oh yeah, by the way, we're going to have James at ArcBlog back on for the Loki finale, which I'm really excited about. The three of us have a nice little chemistry. It's pretty nice. We bounce off each other pretty well. What do you think?
No, I enjoy it. James obviously is a nice steadying hand, has a lot of good information. And like I said, I think we've all had a pretty good rapport doing those episodes. So looking forward to doing a lot more Marvel content and hopefully some other types of content going forward.
Yeah, I agree. All right. So help me with the speed round and then I'll start with the news. Let's pause for a word from our sponsor. Thanks.
Ready to travel in style or check off a vacation bucket list? Cruise Planners will help you plan the perfect luxury experience. Explore exotic destinations like Asia and the South Pacific, to Europe, Alaska, and tropical beaches around the world. Your Cruise Planners travel advisor will customize a vacation just for you with special offers and upgrades for that extra wow. Contact Steve Del Carlino from Cruise Planners by calling 610-368-0908 or at DellTravelCompany.com for the best vacations at the best value.
All right. Thank you so much, Steven Del Carlino. If you guys need a vacation, hit him up. He will take care of you, I promise. and you'll get wherever you need to go. And if you just got vaccinated, what else is there to do? Go see the world. All right, Bill, hit me.
The only thing I watched this week separately, I wanted to quickly mention, I did check out the animated series on Netflix, The Resident Evil Infinite Darkness. Did you see anything about this, Dan?
I totally forgot about this one. Yeah, I did. And I was going to watch it, but I totally forgot about it until you just said it. Well, yeah, is it good?
No.
Oh, okay. All right, whatever.
I didn't enjoy it. I will give everyone the basic premise. It's a 4-episode animated series. They call it anime. It's CGI graphics. It reminds me of the type of graphics you'd get on a cutscene of a Final Fantasy game, or if you've ever seen any of those Final Fantasy VII movies advertised, System Advent, or whatever the hell those ones are. That's the type of animation you're looking at. So canonically, everything in this story is canon. It's supposed to take place between Resident Evil 4, which is one of the best Resident Evil games, and Resident Evil 5, which saw a big departure in the gameplay, becoming more of a co-op shooter. Not a huge fan of 5 and 6, and everyone knows from my reviews, I've been a big fan the last few years of 7 and 8 that have come out. The basic premise is that, what do you know, the government's hiding some kind of bioweapon program, and you get Leon Kennedy and Claire Redfield, two of the mainstays. Oh, and Ada Wong, who is another big character. Dan, it's just so bad. The dialogue is not there. It's very predictable. I didn't love it. I'm going to be really curious to hear Lou and Brian's takes. Those are our hosts of the BLT podcast that we also have on our YouTube. They are big anime guys. I don't think they're going to love this. I'm a big Resident Evil series fan, so that's really what even drew me to it in the first place. I thought maybe we get some really cool Easter eggs or some, maybe, God forbid, there'd be some things teasing, some things that haven't happened yet. And it wasn't there for me. There was nothing that made me go, ooh. And the only saving grace for the series is that the episodes are very short. They are 22 minutes, if that. So all 4 episodes, you only waste, in my opinion, you only waste an hour and a half. But if you like it, an hour and a half investment to check it out. But I was not a huge fan of it. I know that there was people in our group that were curious on my feedback for it. And as a big Resident Evil fan, it did not do it for me.
Yeah, you sound disappointed. That sucks.
I am, man. I love Resident Evil. It's one of my favorite series. And especially even as I grow older, I love the challenge, especially of the older ones. Now, obviously, a lot of people have complaints of the older one because of mainly the style of the camera, the fixed camera in the rooms, and kind of the stop and rotate nature of it. I like that. It made you feel more powerless against the zombies. The big criticism really of these other ones now, I love the environments. I love a lot of the puzzles. The combat's not hard. I'm never really fearing that I'm going down or dying a lot of the time because I'm seasoned at the game, but they make you feel a little bit more of like an action hero in the later ones. And in the early ones, my favorite was Code Veronica, also Resident Evil 2. There was even some like Resident Evil 0 was a GameCube only entry that came that was later on, but I thought also kept up with the vein and was a good game and challenging. But it didn't do it for me, Dan, unfortunately.
You can't win them all. That sucks, though. I hate when you're excited for something. And yeah, we'll talk about something like that later. Okay, yeah, hit me with these. Start with that Dom one. This is funny as shit.
We are big proponents. I know we're giving a shout out to Brian at PCL. He's been fighting the good fight too on Facebook. We love Dom family memes. If you don't love Dom family memes, I want you to kindly subscribe to everything, 5-star review, join the Facebook group, but then mute us. Then mute us because I want nothing to do with you. What do you think?
Yeah, they're all over the place right now. I mean, they're funny as shit. There's certain ones where they'll take a quote from a different show. Like one was like Downton Abbey or some shit like that. And it's like her saying there's nothing more important than the presence of family or something like that. And then it goes to Dom standing there like this motherfucker spitting. It's just like
my favorite one still is the Game of Thrones one where it's Jamie and Cersei hooking up. And then it's just Dom saying you don't do that to family holding the shotgun up. That's my favorite one.
Yeah, that's a good one too. Yeah, I mean, gotta give it to him. It's overused, so you're gonna get meme, dude. And dude, I saw this Matt Damon shit. He turned down the lead role in Avatar, which Sam Worthington, yeah, that's his name. He took it, and I doubt he was offered this.
No, they were offered nothing. He probably got minimum. Yeah.
So he was offered 10% of profits. And not only is it the highest grossing film of all time, yes, sorry, Endgame, it took it back because they re-released it. And it was just kind of bullshit if you ask me, but whatever. So he was going to get 10% of profits, Matt Damon, and he didn't do it. And now they're making five more. So you're already talking, he missed out on $100 million already. So
2.8 or something right now.
Oh yeah. So like 200. Profits.
Just yeah. Say 150 easy.
Easy. And they're making four more. So he could have been a multi-billionaire if he would have done this. And that's crazy. But I guess he didn't want to commit. I mean, look, when's the last time you saw Sam Worthington in a movie? Forever. Because he's been filming all these Avatar movies. They're filming them all back to back to back to back. So, you know, I don't know how someone like Zoe Saldana pulls that off. Maybe she gets killed off, her character. You never know. But because she's very busy. But Worthington, he's put his whole life into this. And now he's probably going to be a very rich man when it's all said and done. But, you know, he's not going to be near what Matt Damon could have had. And that's fucked up. But all right, tell me about this Black Widow thing. I'm going to pull up a stat I saw.
Yeah, so Black Widow, we're going to obviously give our review, but I did want to highlight that Disney did release their box office earnings. And what's interesting is this is the first time to my memory, and I checked a little bit and everyone's kind of commenting the same thing, that they're quickly releasing their Disney Plus numbers as well. So here are the numbers, guys. Black Widow earned $80 million domestically, $78 million internationally, and $60 million plus, according to them, on Disney Plus. I personally went to the theater. I know Dan had the Disney Plus it. I just think it's amazing to have this as an option, Dan. I don't think they release these numbers unless they're trying to already soften everyone up to the idea that this is going to become more normalized. There was the whole thing with HBO Max and Warner's, and then the big backlash to it, where a lot of these movies like Dune and some of them now are only coming to theaters, and some of the Disney ones as well. But I think now, Dan, we're starting to see basically the reasonable people. It's starting to kind of way back into the middle like a pendulum. People are like, all right, look, this is what it is. There's got to be some kind of compromise to all of this. And the government stepping in and helping with movie theaters, a lot of grant programs going on and things. But at the same time, people need to decide what's best for them and what's best for their lives. And this year changed a lot of things for people. And for better or worse, a lot of people's viewing habits, they like this better. Just like a lot of people, Dan, you know, when TV got better, we're 90s kids. When we were like in the 90s, we love sports. And we're both from Philadelphia. Cable sports kind of sucked. You were once in a while get a really good game. But when we hit like 12, 13 years old, all of a sudden digital cable, everything was really hard. All of a sudden going to games wasn't always the best way to watch a game. So now to some people, in a lot of ways, the best way to watch a film or a show or in a lot of ways, even some plays and some things are at home. And they're going to have to it doesn't have to be one or the other, in my opinion.
So, all right, good points there. There's two things I need to point out. So both saw these on Twitter. Now, if you look at the numbers that Bill just said, that means Black Widow made $218 million on its opening weekend. That is a lot of money. Okay.
A lot of money.
Now, if you look at F9, the saga, whatever it is, the Fast saga, family saga, they got to name the last one Family, just straight up. Not even Fast and Furious. Just name it Family and then have like Fast and Furious, like small.
A Fast really and small. Furious film or something.
Yeah, a Fast and Furious film. Yeah. So that made $70 million combined. Now, again, that's no Disney Plus, but still domestic and international. And Fast and Furious movies usually do way better overseas internationally compared to the U.S. They make a shitload of money overseas. So maybe that has something to do with lockdown procedures overseas. But still, it gets crushed by Black Widow. And maybe it wasn't even a better movie. We're going to talk about that later. But $70 million to $218, that's huge. And these are both blockbuster movies that were both pushed back to have these types of numbers. Now, Black Widow obviously did way better. But I look at what Jeremy Scott said. Now, I love Jeremy Scott. He's one of the people I look up to in this business. And I really hope to interview him one day. That's on my bucket list. I've tried a couple times to no avail. So I'm going to let it cool off for a little bit and then shoot my shot again. But he says this is only because of Disney Plus, because the Disney Plus numbers are from people that would have never gone to the theater. Now, I saw it on Disney Plus. I would have preferred to go into the theater. This is a weird weekend for me. I couldn't go. So I had a Disney Plus it. So in my scenario, he's correct. But would I never go? No. Now, he does make a good point, though. it's definitely jacked up due to Disney Plus. I truly think that 80 and 78 domestic and international wouldn't have been that much different had Disney Plus not been available.
Yeah. That's like house money, man. There's no way that if they didn't have Disney Plus as an option, that domestically, just even say most of Disney Plus, I think even a lot of those numbers are a lot of domestic numbers. Just even say half of those are domestic. You're not getting another 30 million at the box office this weekend if it's not available on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
No freaking way. So the money talks. There's no way that they're not going to, maybe they'll let them out for a week, maybe in the theater, but it's going to be, I think they need to do day and date. I just don't see what the big deal is. Give me an argument. Tell me why. Is it going to really destroy the theaters? How many theaters are even left? I'm not even trying to be an asshole. I love the theaters. I went, me and Chone went opening night. Like, we will go and support. We always have, but
it's my preference. I'm a theater guy.
But why just let people enjoy it the way they want to enjoy it? And I'm ready for everyone to be able to, if that means more people got to see this movie, because I was afraid that people weren't going to go out. I thought people were going to go out because of the MCU, but I was worried it wasn't going to get what it deserved. And I was going to feel bad for ScarJo, and thank God, man. And now this is awesome. This is way better than they thought.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a good deal. So the directors that were with Warner Brothers were pissed off, specifically Denis Villeneuve for Dune getting released on HBO Max. But, you know, he won. They're not going to do that now. It's going to be in theaters first for a good amount of time before it heads over to HBO Max. But I really think this is going to happen more and more. And now certain movies you should only see on the big screen if you have the chance. So like Dune, that should only be available on the big screen first. But I think this is going to be more of a thing. And I think Jeremy Scott's onto something. He's the guy from CinemaSins. He's a book writer. He's great. It's fantastic. And I think he's right. I think this is going to become more and more of a thing. And every single streaming service is going to make an agreement, if they don't ever already have one, with the movie studio. And they're going to show the movies day of, if not a week after. But I don't think it's ever going to change. I really don't. And the people that are like, yeah, but it's $30. Listen, I watched it with four people. So that's, if you're all going to the movies, and I usually see movies like these kind of movies in IMAX or 4DX or, you know, whatever, just something better. And that's like $20 a ticket. So you're looking at $80 compared to $30. So it's not that pricey when you really think about it.
You can rewatch it as well. So especially for people like ourselves, it's very useful when you're going to do bonus episodes or you want to do theories or Easter egg type of things. The idea of being able to sit down the first time and watch it and then not go, okay, now I need to do a second run for notes, but I need to now book another movie ticket and go through the process instead of go, okay, I'm going to go chill for a little bit and watch it again tonight with my notebook. It's invaluable.
Yeah, it is. So I killed it, and you know, good for you, Marvel. Keep killing it. So Richard Donner, man, he died, huh?
Rest in peace, Richard Donner, a prolific American filmmaker. We're sad here at the podcast. A lot of our community has expressed that same sentiment. What I found really crazy, and I knew this before, but you go back and you really check and you go through someone's filmography. Obviously, everyone will talk about Superman, but just the range of types of stuff that he was involved in. You're talking The Goonies, you're talking Lethal Weapon, you're talking The Omen, movies like Lady Hawk. 16 Blocks was his last film in 2006. That was actually Bruce Willis as well, which I actually think is a little bit underrated. Beyond the films, and I'll be curious to hear what your favorite one is, Daniel, your thoughts, but just, I was surprised to find out how much of a connection and influence he's had on what we really love today. He is the person that gave Kevin Feige his first unpaid and paid job in
Hollywood. No way.
X-Men.
Wow.
Paid X-Men. He was a production assistant, but Richard Donner and his wife, their production company, were actually the ones that bought the rights to the X-Men to be able to do the film. And they were executive producers on the original X-Men that got everything. The modern superhero era kicked off. So what's your favorite Richard Donner film?
I go back and forth between Superman and Lethal Weapon. Lethal Weapon was like my favorite movie when I was a kid, dude. I used to love that. I would watch all of them, you know? So probably Superman with Christopher Reeve or Lethal Weapon. Yeah. What did you pick?
Superman.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So rest in peace, man. That's a shame. But all right. Tell me about this topic from Dave Hendricks. I actually didn't see this.
Yeah. One sec. I got it right here. Yeah. So shout out to Dave Hendricks. He sent a tweet out to us and copy. This was earlier today. So that's probably why you didn't see it. He made up a good point that we watch all of our stuff now, mainly on our streaming platforms. But what's really great is they will have a lot of the extended editions, director's cuts, things that we're really interested in seeing. However, what they don't include are a lot of the bonus features that were included on these Blu-rays and DVDs upon release. And he specifically mentioned director's commentary and actor's commentary and how it was one of the best parts about getting a DVD or Blu-ray release was that you would have full cuts of the films with actors and directors and producers giving their commentary on scenes and performances. And this hit me really hard because my favorite thing to watch growing up as a teenager, I can vividly remember at least through late middle school and early high school, was the Lord of the Rings extended edition appendices. So for people that aren't aware of this, one, if you've never seen the extended editions of the Lord of the Rings films, that's what you need to watch this week. They are entirely, they're the films on steroids, and they add so much to the films. I can't, if I was the only recommendation I gave you this year, I'm telling you to do that. But what's really interesting on these Blu-ray and DVD sets was that they had two bonus DVDs per movie that were full-length documentaries that they had done while they were filming these films, and everything from pre-production through production, the post-production, editing, miniatures, CGI. You think it was in there. This is in the early 2000s when they filmed it, but it was my favorite thing to watch, Dan. And so that when he brought that topic up, it really hit home to me, and I really agree. And I really think that the streaming, they have it. They have it. This is just audio tracks. Just add it as an option. I think it would be awesome. Are you a fan of commentary?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, first thing that comes to my head, well, I have two things. One, I want to say real quick, one of my favorite YouTube shows is Actors on Actors, when they're talking about specific roles they've had. And there's no interviewer. It's just two actors talking back and forth about acting. But my favorite commentary I've ever seen, it's got to be Ben Affleck when he's talking about Armageddon. Did you ever see this?
No.
It's so funny. All right. So he goes, yeah, so Michael Bay ended up not liking me very much. And I don't know if he'll want to use me again, but I think they worked together in Pearl Harbor after that, right? So I don't know, but it's pretty so funny. So he goes, yeah, so this scene here, Bruce Willis is telling then the NASA scientists how to drill a hole. And he's like, you know, I walked up to Michael Bay one day and I was like, hey, Michael, don't you think it'd be easier to teach NASA scientists how to drill a hole rather than construction workers have to fly to a space? And he's just like, shut the fuck up.
I have seen that. That is cool. I saw that typed out. I never saw the actual thing, but that is so, the whole premise of the movie is broken.
Yeah. And then he keeps making fun of him. He's like, yeah. And then Bruce here is trying to say, you know, you guys don't got it. They're all textbook guys. You got to feel it. You got to feel the equipment. And he's just like, yeah, he's like laughing his ass off. So yeah, I love that shit. It's great. Hit me with some of your best YouTube clips and I'll watch all of them. So yeah. Nintendo news, hit me.
Okay, we'll go through some news topics here before our Black Widow review. I put this as Nintendo announces Nintendo Switch OLED. Nintendo is just going to keep Nintendoing. Basically, there's been rumors, and these are just BS Reddit rumors. There were reports on reputable sites like Forbes saying that a new Nintendo Switch was coming that was going to have a new screen, improved memory, 4K resolution output on the stand, added all kind of souped up of better, basically the Switch 2. What we got was the same exact hardware, the same exact crappy Joy-Cons that actually get drifted is a huge issue with the Nintendo Switch. And all they added was a 720 OLED screen, which is apparently looks nice and all, but they are charging $350 for it.
Jeez, man.
That's Nintendo insane. Just does this. They don't discount their games. Anything first party, never discounted. The Switch, because it's been so in demand since it came out, there's never been a price drop on the Switch. A regular Switch, you can get them now. I saw like 7 in Target today when I was there, but they're still $300. Wow. You get a Switch Lite for $200, but you can't dock it then. It's like, oh, come on, dude.
Dude, speaking of killing you, the next thing you have here, this stuff kills me all the time. Like, I think of this with my Pokemon cards. I had all this stuff as a kid. All I had to do was put one of them aside, just wrap it up real nice, real nice and tight, and leave it until today. And then I'd have $1 million. It kills me.
This week, two world records for video game collectibles were broken within 2 days of one another. It was Thursday of this week. The Legend of Zelda, sealed copy for the Nintendo Entertainment System, so the original Nintendo, sold for $875,000, which is crazy. It broke the record. Before that, it was a sealed copy of the original Super Mario Brothers for Nintendo. That makes a lot of sense to me. I thought that would somehow still be the number one. However, the Plumber Man still has the number one spot. A sealed copy of Super Mario 64 for the N64, obviously one of the GOAT games of all time. $1.5 million, Dan. Why didn't we not put one aside?
I don't know. Just one, Dan. I hope this guy is that rich that he immediately gets it from the mail, cracks it open and pops it in, blows it, gets it all ready to go in and plays it. Like, imagine having that much fuck you money and then... Yeah, that's a $1.5 million video game that's now not worth anything if you play it.
It may not even work.
Yeah, it may not work. Yeah, so you got to leave it in that box forever.
Yeah, other video game news I'll touch on really quickly. There was a new Assassin's Creed game that leaked, so now it had to be confirmed in development. The code name is Assassin's Creed Infinite. Mm-hmm. What was interesting for me, and that's why I wanted to talk to you about it, was because the actual quote was that it was going to have, again in quotes, a Fortnite-like evolving map. So what some people are starting to theorize this is going to be, Dan, is that instead of doing full installments like they've been doing with Origins, Odyssey, Valhalla, shout out to our buddy Ian. He's a big Assassin's Creed fan. He plays it. He even plays it on his stream. They now are going to, it seems like, make it more of like a platform live service game a la Destiny, I'm guessing. Something maybe like Destiny slash like Fortnite. What I'm saying is, like, you're going to buy the next Assassin's Creed game whenever it comes out, and they're just going to have almost expansion installments, I'm guessing, Dan, but also monthly events. And is there going to be a hub world? Because the whole idea of it is that you could have that Animus thing, which makes sense. So you can jump across different timelines, and it said this game will take place during different timelines. So what the hell is the structure? Is it gonna be like co-op dungeon play? Is it gonna people are annoyed. Twitter, and I looked into this before we recorded, and Assassin's Creed fans went from having a really cool kind of action adventure sneaky fun game that's became a full-blown 100-hour RPG and now apparently is going to get bastardized again. So I feel for the fans of that franchise.
Yeah, see, I like games that make me suffer. Like my first ever favorite game is Ape Escape, and that's been rumored to come back for like three generations now, and it's still not back. Literally, I think PS2 is the last one. And 3, 4, and 5 all rumoring it. 4 and 5 are heavily rumoring it. 5 now, and it still hasn't come back out yet. And then Dead Space, that skipped a generation, didn't come out on PS4 like I thought it would. And now that might come back. And then you got people that like Assassin's Creed that gets a new version almost every year. And I actually fell off after Assassin's Creed 1. I played it so much. I was a freshman in college. I played it so much that I burned it up, and I never bought another copy.
It's so funny.
That's where I am with Assassin's Creed. You still playing?
The last one I played was Origins, which was the first one that was the new style, the RPG. It was Egypt. I beat the main mission, but like I said, I mean, even just to get through the main mission, I think I still put 40 plus hours into it. And you have to level up, and there's a lot, there's gear and armor upgrades, and I was a World of Warcraft player for years and years and years, MMO player. So I'm no stranger to the gear grind and things like that. I really enjoyed. That's actually why I enjoyed Destiny. I still may even play that again until Halo comes out, because I'm kind of on an in-between. We play our Fortnite, but I'd like to have something else first person wise. And honestly, I like Call of Duty for what it is. I'm more of a zombies player, but I'm just not in the scene as much as most everyone else is. So it's a little bit tough for me to kind of even try to jump back in. But I like the idea of Destiny, of having the bosses and having to have the strategy amongst your teammates. The Division was kind of like that, Tom Clancy game. I do like that. And I think we do actually have a community now, which I think is really cool. We're going to shout that out more in the groups going forward, but we definitely want to party up and game more, play some co-op stuff. So any suggestions too, and like I said, we'll put this out on social media, but anyone listening, any games you guys play outside of, like we mentioned, Dan and I always play Fortnite. We have Call of Duty. It's not really our thing, but we'd love to play some other stuff with you guys.
Yeah, for sure. And whenever you guys want, seriously, I'm Cena Vader's pod, play whenever you want. What's your gamer tag?
It is, most of them, it's Billy_Blinks in some form or fashion. I'll check my stuff and I'll put it out there.
Okay, cool. And then Paddington 3 comes back. As Bill says, the king is returning, because Paddington 2 is now the highest rated movie ever. Because what, Citizen Kane got a bad review that was found from years ago, like the 50s or some shit, or longer than that. So I've never seen him. Bill says don't sleep on him, so I trust him. So if you guys need something good to watch, check out Paddington. And love story of the week, Bennifer is back, huh? Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez are now a couple. Double date with Tom and Zendaya. Oh, I'd lose my shit.
That's all. That's the whole story.
Yeah, but if you're A-Rod, you got to be sour, because listen, there's nothing got to be worse than your girl leaving you for her ex. That means for she Batman. Never truly got over her. Yeah, she never truly got over him, and that's got to fucking sting. But all right, tell me about The Witcher 2.
Witcher 2. Yeah, there was a WitcherCon this past week or weekend. Witcher obviously is a big CD Projekt Red video game property. Henry Cavill started the Netflix series. It's going to have a spinoff series already announced. They started to announce some casting this past couple of weeks. There's also going to be a one-off anime, Witcher anime, on Netflix. Netflix loves anime stuff, man. They try to do anime takes on other properties. They hit on some, they miss on others. But the season 2 trailer dropped. You got to see some other characters that people know from the games. You got to see more monsters. I'm a big Henry Cavill fan and supporter. I liked The Witcher. I liked the game better. I thought the season was okay. I thought it was a little bit slow. There was some branching storylines, but it looks like this season it's going to be a lot more unified, the cast and the storyline. So I think it got a lot of world building out of the way, and I think this should be a little bit more fun. Did you like The Witcher? We weren't podcasting together when that dropped.
I didn't watch it.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, I think that's something maybe before. I said Henry Cavill does great and everything, in my opinion, at least.
I'll probably end up checking it out. I don't know why I did. I just didn't. So okay, time to get into the Black Widow movie review. Black Widow. So let me first off say yes, I was super excited for this. Yes, I thought Taskmaster was going to be good. And I have to concede here, they definitely showed most of her action scenes in the trailers. And they changed who it was from the comic book. That part doesn't really annoy me. What annoys me is she wasn't really a villain. You know, she was like, now full spoilers here, people. Full spoilers. So we're going to bounce back and forth. But, you know, she was brainwashed. And the real villain was her dad. But there is one thing here that I wanted to point out. Our good friend Ryan Airy said something that I never really would have thought of. Okay, so hear this out, Bill. Taskmaster in the Billy. Wow. Hello, I'm Dan. I'm English. I'm American and I speak English. Taskmaster, I can't talk. In this movie... represents Natasha's greatest failure, her original sin, the price she paid for her freedom, why she thinks she's a monster. She is also a look at Natasha's dark side, like X-24 in Logan. She ends the movie by facing her darkest timeline self, then redeeming her original sin. Much as I love Tony Masters, a wisecracking mercenary supervillain coach wouldn't have fit as well in this movie. Now, that is a bit of a saving grace, but still, it just didn't work. It should have been a different villain.
That point, listen, Dan, I want to address that point. I did see a couple of the tweets. I have not read anyone's reviews. I'd make sure I do that before we give our thoughts. I love Ryan Airy is an amazing as far as covering, as far as his thoughts, as far as the theories, his knowledge, way dwarfs ours as far as just his library of knowledge. I respect the idea of Natasha's original sin and the idea that Natasha has made some mistakes, especially as a mercenary, as a widow, where especially in the case of this Taskmaster, bombing a house where you knew there would be a little girl in there because it would be collateral damage. However, I don't think how the MCU is presented Natasha. She's made, and then this is some of the most criticized lines in the MCU, but in back even in Age of Ultron, she mentions about the hysterectomies and mentions that that's why she refers to herself as a monster. So while I think she holds guilt over this, I think if this was the ultimate thing that was her original sin and something that she had to come to terms with, I think they should have presented that in her ultimate arc. I think it should have had to do with her end, with the redemption arc, with her sacrifice that she makes in Endgame. And to me, that didn't land. The character, like you said, Dan, was not that. It was not a character. It was a plot device. Taskmaster might as well have been a freaking robot, an android, because he didn't speak, or she didn't speak.
Not till the end. Yeah.
And I didn't understand, why couldn't she explain her motivations? Why was he speaking for the father? That villain to the father was so throwaway. It was just like a guy you would see on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He's a businessman. And also, I know that we talk about the suspension of disbelief, but I just had a really hard time believing that the Red Room existed floating in the sky and no one ever noticed. S.H.I.E.L.D. never noticed. Yeah. Hydra. Yeah, exactly. Thor didn't fly by one time. And listen, I'm not one of those people who goes, oh, where was Doctor Strange during Spider-Man? Or, I'm not trying to be that guy, but this movie, let me get to my chief complaints. I'm glad, Dan. I'm not glad that you didn't enjoy it as much as you wanted to, but you know where my take has been going into this. I think this movie, first of all, I enjoyed it overall. I did not hate it. I think that I want to address my positives before my negatives, and we can then dive back and forth. But
Florence Pugh and David Harbour.
Yelena killed it. Yelena was amazing. Her meta, I love her dialogue. It was so smart, so meta all the time. The stuff about the poses, even being able to talk about what the Red Room did with them with the involuntary hysterectomies. That line was so poignant, but sarcastic in a way that educated you, made you feel genuine sympathy for the character, but also got a laugh in the theater. It was a really weird mix. The action is great. I had a little bit of a sidebar with Brad from Canon about this before you had seen it. Yeah, the action's amazing. It's MCU quality action, but this is their 20 whatever entry, and then you start adding in things like Falcon and Winter Soldier, Loki, the other stuff. We're starting to get up to 30 entries in this. The action's not enough for me. I expect there to be good action in a Marvel thing. I think Shang-Chi will be different because I think we're going to have a lot more martial arts and hand-to-hand. It's going to be a little bit different. I think that will be a big selling point of that film. But are Natasha Romanoff and Dominic Toretto related? In the last two movies that we've gone and reviewed, big movies, these characters, like, she should not have survived the opening attack where she gets shot with the goddamn rocket launcher, or 47 buildings she falls off. The finale is her falling from the damn sky, jumping off from pieces of buildings.
I like that scene.
Yeah, but come on, dude. She's not any of these other things. And again, everyone knows me at this point. I'm not somebody that looks to nitpick everything, but the action shouldn't take you out of it. And I just started laughing a little bit at this point. And I was like, what is going on with this? Like, this is just... This is not what you don't. Natasha doesn't need this. Like, she doesn't need to be doing these set pieces for her to be cool to me. I think all the stuff, surprisingly, in this movie that worked for me was the non-spy action stuff. It was the family scenes. It was the teasing. And I never thought that's what I would have enjoyed about this film. But overall, it is not. It's not top half Marvel for me. I respect everyone that loves it. This movie meant a lot to people. I would argue that this movie meant a lot to people too, just because of the circumstances as well. A lot of people going back. I saw a lot of people tweeting about when the Marvel crawl came, they started to cry. And I feel you right there all in the feels. I think at the end of the year, after we have Shang-Chi, Eternals, and Spider-Man, it will be at the bottom of everyone's list for this year.
Probably. That's not out of the realm of possibility. But I wanted to point out, like, Ray Winstone, who was Mr. French in Departed, played the villain in this movie, Dracoff, and he was just bad. He was bad. And I loved him in Departed, and I think he's a good actor. But I think he was just like a mean-ass dude. Like, when it came down to it, he was just mean as shit. And I don't like villains that have that one side to them. I'm not saying everybody should be counterbalanced exactly 50-50, but have a little bit of perspective to see why you're doing this shit other than ultimate power. Like, come on, man. So I don't know if this falls on Kate Shortland, director, or who this falls on, the writers. I don't know. But yeah, it's in the bottom half for me too. But I definitely enjoyed Florence Pugh. Now, as we saw in the mid-credit scene, she's going to be coming back, possibly working with, what's his name? The guy from...
She's working for Val, and then they're going to go after Clint, go after Hawkeye.
Yeah, who's the one? Who's the guy? What the fuck is his name?
John Ross?
Yeah, U.S. agent. No, the U.S. agent from Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Yeah, John Ross. Yeah, I thought you were saying Secretary Ross for a second. Yeah, he's awesome. So I love that they're going to be working together. Now, you know, she's going to be a villain in quotes, but Clint loved her. And she's going to find that out real quick. And that's not true. He didn't kill her. He tried to kill himself. And so she'll learn that. She'll learn the truth, hopefully. But David Harbour, fantastic. Rachel Weisz, she's always great. And I love their performances. I'd like to see Red Guardian more. And I saw a theory. So you know his war stories against Captain America?
I was literally going to ask you. That's literally what I was going to ask you. Do you think he fought him?
So it'd be impossible for one other than one reason, other than one way. One, if he was actually fighting Winter Soldier, because they could have unfroze him to fight him real quick. Or two, if he was actually fighting the alternate timeline Cap, the one that goes back in time to stay with his wife. So that's pretty cool. I don't know. We'll see if it actually happened. And, you know, Marvel, they don't just throw shit in for no reason. They're going to show us something. And hopefully we get more Red Guardian. And I like this whole family. Like Bill said, when they were talking together as a family, they were like the best parts. And they were. And a shout out to OT Fagmanley for being in this. Our boy Luke from Handmaid's Tale. He did great in this as Mason. He's the guy who just hooks you up with shit. And I think the child actors did a great job. I like the whole thing with the widows. That was cool. But the fact that they were, you know, mind controlled with something that looked just like the time travel stuff, like Hank Pym's secret sauce, and it's just like I don't know, man. Like, some of this just missed, man. It just missed. And yeah, I was highly let down by Taskmaster. They literally showed all of her scenes in the trailers, all of them. If you think of it, like, all of her good fight scenes, all of her cool moves was in the trailer. And I'll tell you what, Marvel in the beginning, the MCU, if you wanted to knock them for something, you can knock them for the villains. Now, outside of Loki, they didn't have many good villains, and Red Skull, they didn't have many great villains in the beginning. And now they've fixed that, and they've had some really good villains leading up to Thanos. So, yeah, I think they fell short there. I don't know who to blame, man. It's obviously not the actress who played Taskmaster. It's not her fault. She barely talked, but...
I think a lot of this has to do with timing, Dan. I think how great would this movie have been if it actually came out right after Civil War?
Yeah.
It would have been cool. I think it would have been cool because you would have learned more about Natasha. You would have seen the thing. You would have known that Yelena exists. Then Infinity War and Endgame happens. She dies. And when she dies in Endgame, the only really complaint, obviously us as characters have a big attachment to her. I mean, us as audience have a big attachment to her. But for all we know, she has no family. She really isn't losing. She was the only character that didn't have really anyone else that would, for all intents and purposes, be affected by her not being there. If we know that after all this time and all the stuff she went through and she finally has Yelena in her life, to know that she's sacrificing that, I think would have hit me a lot harder, at least that's just my opinion.
I think if I had to pick my perfect timing, my ideal timing would have been between Infinity War and Endgame.
That too.
To squeeze it in, because it was cool seeing her go back to break out, to help Steve and all that shit. So it was cool to see that and be like, oh, I know what she's going to go do right now. So maybe if they squeezed it in there with, cause that was along with Captain Marvel. Right. And Ant-Man 2 was squeezed in there too. So yeah, I think it'd been nice to be in those set of movies instead of this, but you know, we got, but I ultimately think the problem was the villain. They should have went with a different villain. I don't know who off the top of my head, but they essentially ruined a great villain. And that sucks. A great villain from the comics is ruined in the MCU. So it's kind of like what people thought they did to what was that, Iron Man 3, the Mandarin. It's Mandarin. Like what people thought they did to him, but now we're actually going to see the Mandarin in Shang-Chi and the Legends of the Ten Rings. So I don't know, man. They swing and a miss here. Swing and a miss. I don't have much else to say. I was quite disappointed, but
just so you know, Dan,
still enjoyed myself.
I have that sentiment. Chone had the same sentiment. Chone was actually, it was funny to go with Chone. Chone was like commenting out loud as things were happening. That annoys me so much. The unrealism thing that really was getting to Sean. It was actually really funny. He's just like, what do you mean? What? Like, he was just like,
see, I don't care about that. Like,
but it's funny because Sean's not like that usually either. So I'm saying that, like, maybe if Dom Toretto got our goddamn
senses
up, but
the MCU has done so much weird shit now, especially with all the multiverse. And like, I just turn off my suspension. I'd suspend my level of disbelief for these movies. I don't care. Unless it's literally Dom Toretto catching someone on a car a couple times in a row. Then
it kind of got me this one, but like, I'm actually literally texting with Brian right now, and Brian did not like it. And Kevin literally, as we're talking right now, just chimed in as well. He didn't like it. Brian Volk and Kevin Fee. So all the reality guys, we were not. Again, I genuinely like, I enjoyed it. I didn't get through it and was what the fuck was that? But I wasn't going in with great expectations, and I was a little bit more pleasantly surprised than I thought. But I think a lot more people thought it was going to be outrageously great, and they were disappointed. And I'm seeing, again, a lot of opinions of people that I really respect that really love it. And I'm sure after I record this and tonight, I'm going to listen to some of the podcasts, you know, PCL and some of the other guys that I really, you know, support and love. And they may all love this stuff. And, you know, that's what the beauty of all this is that you could all have differing opinions. And, you know, we'll just go for the next one, right?
Yeah. And look, it's a smash hit. It's making tons of money. So, you know, at the end of the day, it did make some people very happy with the director and the story of, you know, the women and all that. But it fell short for me. And that's just the way it is. Mainly because they used the wrong villain. They should have saved Taskmaster for something else. Maybe for when Deadpool makes an appearance. That would have been great for Deadpool's first villain in the MCU to be Taskmaster. Come on. That would have been awesome.
Mimicking or Taskmaster could have been cool in Falcon and Winter Soldier. Or, you know, that would it'd be cool. Listen, that would have been cool in this. I wish he talked. Just wish he talked.
Yeah. The budget was $200 million, or it already made that back. It's on its way to half a billion. So it's going to do fine. But listen, if you guys disagreed, let us know. We're Cinevaders on all social medias, cinevaders@gmail.com. If you want to just send me an email, but other than that, yeah, we'll see you guys Wednesday night for our Loki review. And then you'll catch me on Paul Hart's podcast, Apples to Oranges. And see you guys soon.
Peace.
Take it easy.
Oh, thank you.